It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Tuesday, July 15th. I'm Noelle King, in for Ben Johnson in Los Angeles. The FCC has proposed changes to net neutrality, the thing that ensures all internet content moves at the same speed. They asked the public to comment on the proposal and got almost 650,000 comments online. Well, today is the deadline to weigh in, at least for now. Marvin Amore is a lawyer and internet policy expert. Hey, Marvin.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Marvin, do we have any idea what those commenters were saying?
Almost all of those commenters are in favor of net neutrality, and I think almost all of them oppose what the FCC is trying to do.
Does the FCC always open up these flashpoint issues to public comment?
Yeah, it's part of the FCC's, you know, rulemaking. They're supposed to propose a rule and then ask the public for comment. You've probably never heard of any other FCC proceedings because a lot of them are kind of boring.
Look, I'm sure a lot of people appreciate that they can comment, but how great does the outrage need to be for the FCC to change its tune?
So if you live in Washington, D.C., you live in a place where, like, there are so many telecom and cable lobbyists everywhere. And so what the public has to do is overcome that huge bubble. It's a lot like the SOPA issue a few years ago when Wikipedia went black for a day and hundreds of thousands of people started calling Congress. Until that day, no one in Congress realized that they were doing something unpopular because they'd only heard from Hollywood lobbyists.
The first round of public comment ends today. What happens next?
There'll be another round of public comments.
Why two rounds of public comment? Why not just give people a couple months and then close it out?
Usually what happens is you're AT&T or you're some other big company, you hire some expensive lawyers, they write 100 pages of detailed legal analysis, they file it 60 days later. This time around, with the public involved, people will just be commenting throughout the entire proceeding, I think. And that's what we've seen. It's been unusual.
So a unique situation in part because of the sheer numbers. Marvin Amore is a lawyer and internet policy expert. He's also a Future Tense Fellow at the New America Foundation. Marvin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Starting this week, you can walk into one of 12 Home Depot stores and buy a 3D printer, a machine that can create small items from melted plastic. They were once the province of hobbyists, but this is a step toward mainstream consumers. Reporter Tracy Samuelson has the story.
Mike McGrath watches a MakerBot build up layers and layers of melted plastic to create a small bolt.
I've never actually seen one working.
McGrath works in construction and says maybe if the machine was cheaper, right now it starts around $1,400, he could imagine printing parts for his tools when they break.
Little clips for table saws, like everything's made out of plastic for all these machines.
You need a digital design for anything you want to make, and the MakerBot can't print in metal. So McGrath couldn't have made any of the items he's buying. Mostly, the printer is still a novelty, a way to get people in the door, says Jocelyn Phillips, a research analyst with IBIS World.
Home Depot and Lowe's and all the other companies in the industry have traditionally gotten you to come to the store for the hammer, but while you're in the store, they've got a demo on how to make a bulletin board, how to do your garden.
Phillips says Home Depot is facing increased competition from hardware and online stores, so it's trying a buzzy new technology to print itself apart from its competitors. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
These days, many of us are concerned about our carbon footprints and have moved toward low-energy light bulbs or carpooling. But there are other big factors contributing to carbon emissions, like illegal logging in rainforests. The problem is rainforests are often remote, so we rely on satellites to beam back images of illegal logging, but they don't reach us until after the criminals have gone. Topher White says he's got a solution. He's the CEO of Rainforest Connection. Hey, Topher, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign for a device you invented that you call a solution to illegal logging. It sounds like a tall order. How does it work?
It's a hardware device built from old cell phones that is put out in the forest, and it listens for the sounds that we know are illegal logging and poaching, and it sends real-time alerts to authorities who can show up and stop it.
You're listening for specific things. What are the sounds of illegal logging?
Chainsaws. And chainsaws are one of those sounds that in the forest, it really doesn't belong. So we're actually able to pick it out quite easily, even at great distance.
So this is a device made of old cell phones. Tell me, how does it deal with rain? How do you power it? And do you need a cell phone signal in order for it to be able to work?
Yeah, so if you were to look at the device, what you would see is a black box inside which is a standard Android cell phone. But there's a really high-powered microphone sticking out. And there's these petals, they sort of look like flower petals sticking out. But on these pedals, there are these strips of solar panels that are standard solar panels, the same ones you have on your roof, but they're configured in such a way and they're wired up in such a way that we're able to maximize the amount of energy we can generate from the very rare rays of light that break through the canopy.
All right, let's talk about the enforcement. So once the device picks up the sound of the chainsaw, it then sends a signal to local law enforcement. Is that right?
Yeah, so out in the forest, as you brought this up, is there cell phone service out there? There is, particularly on the periphery that's close to civilization. But in doing so, it actually is able to stream the live audio from the device up to the cloud. We do the analysis, and then we actually send alerts to, first, local enforcement on the ground. They don't respond. More rangers will get it. If they don't, their bosses. If not them, their funders, and then on up.
Last question, Topher. How can you tell that it's the sound of a chainsaw versus the sound of something else out in the jungle?
With the chainsaws, they, in fact, do have an internal combustion engine, which turns at about 110 times per second. So we're able to pick out these spikes that occur at very set frequencies. And those spikes never occur from virtually anything else in the forest. And so we're able to match those at that signature, so to speak, out of the soundscape of the forest, which is actually a very noisy place.
Topher White is the CEO of Rainforest Connection. And finally, Germany has won the World Cup trophy and a little something else. Beats by Dre will give each player a pair of 24-karat gold headphones. It might be a little jab at soccer's governing body. FIFA has a licensing agreement with Sony and banned players from wearing Beats headphones inside the stadium. With the World Cup over, the team can wear their new ear candy anywhere they want. I'm Noelle King, in for Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.